You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here with Joyelle Johnson, Ryan Hamilton, John Lasseter, and of course, my co-host, Mr. Dan Natterman. And you three were all witness to the show of the century or whatever is being, the billion-dollar comedy show. And so
why don't you just briefly explain
what Why don't you explain it? And you're better at this than I am.
Okay. Was it last week? I don't even remember what day it was.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
There was a, now, we always get special guests that drop by here at the Comedy Cellar. But 2 weeks ago, they all came at the same time. We had Jerry Seinfeld, Amy Schumer, Aziz Ansari, Chris Rock, and Dave Chappelle all stopped by on the same night and all performed on the same show.
And Dave Attell.
Well, I'm not counting Dave because he is not a drop-in guest. Although he certainly...
Technically, he was scheduled.
He was scheduled. And so was Ryan Hamilton, who was sitting to my left. Yeah. And I didn't mention his name either because these are not drop-in guests.
And
was Joyelle on the show? I don't believe so.
Joyelle was on the show afterwards.
Oh.
The next show.
The
okay.
late night show that was sad afterwards. Very sad.
And it was a historical event. It got Noam a lot of press. Well, it got the club a lot of press.
It was the all-time most noteworthy event we've ever had on the world stage, I would say. And John Lasseter got his tweet.
John was the host of the show.
Published all over the
around the world.
Around the world.
Yes.
So anyway, so what do you guys want to? What do you remember about it? You must be telling this story around. When did you understand what was cooking and what was about to happen?
You know what? To be honest with you, I thought that I was told actually because they were all here that show definitely wasn't going to happen, that there was no room for them, and because there were so many of them, some of them had to go on the next show.
Well, actually, because I knew that Amy was here, or Amy was coming,
and not going on,
and I thought she was going, but I knew that. Then how did they all trickle in?
Amy was around the corner. Dave and Seinfeld were shooting a late night show.
Dave Chappelle?
Were they on the Tonight Show?
I believe Fallon. Yeah.
Fallon
yeah.
with the First Lady.
Right. And then Aziz was getting ready for SNL.
So Dave and Chris came down together?
Dave and Seinfeld came down together? Yes, I believe, yes.
Okay.
Amy was around the corner.
Amy didn't know they were coming.
No, she was around the corner. Yeah, with Colin.
Oftentimes these famous people do come in clumps. We see twos and threes quite frequently.
That's true.
But this was the biggest clump we've ever had. They do tend to come in clusters because they all hang out together. Or they all call each other up and say, hey, I'm going to be at the Cellar.
And then Aziz was prepping for his SNL
that week. Aziz was getting ready, for the last couple of weeks, getting ready for SNL. So he was already on, and so was Attell. They were both on the docket anyway.
And Chris also just walked in by accident?
That sounded like, to me, like Dave might have called him and said, hey, we're going down to the Cellar, meet us down there. But I'm not sure of that.
Or maybe
he's
Amy. Because
preparing for his tour.
Yeah.
We're talking about Dave Chappelle. Let's distinguish between Dave Chappelle and Dave Attell.
Yeah.
So were they all sitting here at the table?
Yes. But when I walked in, you know, because I have to get the rundown to know who to give what time, because the show's got to try to come in on time. But I was told they're definitely not all going on. You know what I mean? So when I asked, hey, how much time should I start cutting? Because they give me a little leeway. You got great people that work for you here. They trust me. I was told, do all your time up top and let Ryan do his time. No way if all of them are going on, the two of us get to do all our time.
Can I ask you which one of my great people told you to do that? Sound like a pretty, let's not leave any options open for ourselves. Dumb advice. I would have told you do very little time, and if there's time at the end of the show, you can do more time then.
Yeah.
that's why I get the big bucks.
Well, I mean, but Amy definitely
was that
wasn't.
Was that Val? That sounds like a vowel to me.
You know, it was a guy. I forgot his name. I haven't seen him here recently. I don't recall his name right now.
Well, because now I know who's to blame for all the people that had to wait outside. But go ahead.
They told me that I would be doing 10, and I think I got off right about 10. You let me, and I got off right away.
Yeah.
So I didn't do my full 15.
He did 15 at the top. I actually went through the audio today to because I cut all out all the intros so they can cut them into this show.
Yeah.
And John did a full 15 at the top.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And no way I would have done that had I, you know what I mean?
No, it was, there's nothing bad about that night.
No, but I'm just saying this. No, I'm only making that point to say that there's none of us knew when the show began that that was coming down the pike.
And Val obviously didn't even realize it was a possibility that any of the five most famous comics in the world would be here for any other reason other than the borscht.
I will say about John's
French
set.
We do have truffle fries, but go ahead.
Oh, John's set. See, it seems like the audience, even though this was this crazy show that they didn't know was happening, the audience was stellar from the get-go. Did you feel that?
Oh, yeah.
Because when I got up, I thought, John just crushed. And then I got up and they were great.
Yeah.
And which is often in the first spot, you don't feel like it's like it takes a minute.
Yeah.
Well, he did a solid 15. I have to give him that. I listened to it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was great.
He's the best host.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, do you often get the first spot?
I go first often. I get moved all over the place.
Are there people that SD prefers to put on first? We'll get back, of course, to
the people who are respectful and don't complain.
The non-squeaky wheels.
The non-squeaky wheels open the show.
Nobody wants
the greased wheels.
I hate to say it. That's really the truth.
Uh-oh. I'm being summoned. I'll be back. I'll be back.
You know, oh, John.
I know.
Calabria, you're...
I'll be back.
He'll be back. Just for the audience, no comedian likes to go on first before the audience is completely warmed up and at ease. And What Noam is saying is that those who don't complain about it often get that spot. I'm disproportionately represented among first spotters.
You're a similar type. You don't bitch.
But that night didn't feel like it was a first spot. It felt
well. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's from the first spot. Also, first spot, when you invite people to come to the show, you feel like it's not as impressive when you have the first spot because in the mind of the audience, I'm assuming that they figure the first spot is not as good.
It's an opener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there is that issue. Joelle, you were on the show following...
I've never seen her perform.
Well, she's relatively new here.
I'm very new here. I just got passed here a couple of months ago.
I should have seen you by now. I'm sorry that I haven't. I'm sorry I mispronounced your name, too.
Oh, it's okay. Janelle's actually another female comic, and we get
No,
confused.
I think I said Jarelle.
You said Janelle.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was like my son is so into Superman heroes. I thought I just said Jarelle. Oh.
Yes. I am one of Superman's siblings, yes. I usually get the first spot a lot as well. But I had to do the show afterwards. And I actually got some good energy because everybody was anticipating.
But did any special guests come to the show after?
Absolutely not. They were all at Blue Ribbon.
they all hang out together. When you're famous, and we've discussed this before, all of a sudden they're all friends. People that would probably have nothing to do with each other. I mean, since when, you know, are Aziz and Chris Rock, why would they be friends? Other than they're both part of the same fraternity, a famous, you know, which I guess is reason enough.
Sure.
I believe that, I've said this before, I think that being famous is very hard on the famous, even though it sounds, and that they are comfortable with people who understand them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I would think so.
Well, I don't know if it's hard, but I do think there is a certain understanding that they had. They know they're at the same level. They know that. They don't necessarily like, if they're hanging out with me, they might think, oh, Dan's trying to angle, get in, trying to get something, you know, potentially.
Yes. And which they'd be absolutely right.
Well, I'm not generally a good maneuverer in that respect, but I would be thinking it.
Yeah, of course.
I would definitely be thinking it. When I have conversations with Judd Apatow, it's like the elephant in the room. We're talking about the weather, and it's like, all right, dude, you know, you could change my life, and you're not doing it.
Listen,
and that's what's going on in my mind.
I think that comedy is very more than almost most arts is very, very much a meritocracy. No matter what everyone says,
you're going to set me off.
Let me finish,
and you're going to get a whooping.
Because you don't know where I'm going.
If
people all over the world are downloading or streaming your YouTube clips alone in their room and listening to what you say and laughing at it, you can't fake that. So. All these people, they really are funny. Among the funniest people in the world. However, When you sit at the table with them, the laughs that they get from the people around them are not warranted by the quality of the transcript. The transcript is not warranted. When you are super famous, everybody just laughs. It's like, right? It's like,
yeah.
And they know that too.
Yeah.
And they know that their impression becomes distorted. Like, it's a whole thing.
I don't
know
if they know that or not, to be honest with you.
I have not seen one of these famous people have a joke that fell flat since they became famous, all right? That's just not possible. Somebody always is there to laugh for them.
And it happens with the audience a little bit, too, in the beginning.
In with the audience, too.
Yeah.
But at the table, forget about it. You think Natterman's going to like, you bombed. the only person who has the balls to do that would be Keith Robinson.
Yes, that's true.
I do want to discuss an interesting point that does happen here when we have the show went, the second show, I assume, that you did, Joy-El, the show after the $1 billion show was called.
Yes.
I'm not sure who called it that, but somebody did.
Chris
Rock.
The New York Times?
On stage,
someone said that.
Dave said it.
He said, you've seen $1 billion worth of comedians.
I thought
here.
It was Chris. I'm pretty sure it was Chris. It sounds like Chris.
By the way, that $1 billion is heavily weighted towards Seinfeld. I mean, he's most of the billion right there.
He is.
I know what you're thinking about Jews. Just keep it to yourself. But Dan immediately opened an Excel spreadsheet and tried to see if it was, accurate.
I was actually trying to think. I was like, who's the poorest person in that group? Like, who's the poor person?
That's an interesting question.
Especially after...
So the Jews about money, but Joy-El was immediately thinking, who's the poorest?
Black people think about money.
Black people
all the
think.
Time.
How about everybody thinks about
Joy-El
money?
Because Joy-El was worried about who was the poorest.
That was my thought. I was like, who was the poorest?
She wasn't worried about
it. I knew the Jew was the richest.
She wasn't worried about it. She was simply pondering it. And the answer to your question, by the way, of who is the poorest of that group is probably Mr. Aziz Rajiv Ansari.
Okay.
I don't know if that's his middle name. I don't know. But to answer your question.
I figured it was between those two.
It's Aziz, or who's the other one that you thought might be?
Schumer.
Well, look.
I think Schumer might be richer than Chappelle.
After the Netflix deal?
No, not after the Netflix deal.
Schumer got a Netflix deal too. But anyway, so you did the show after the $1 billion show, and it started very late, right? Is that correct?
Started very late.
Okay,
yes.
Now so here's something that happens at the Cellar that we've discussed, but I think is interesting. Oftentimes there'll be a show with special guests. Now the special guests get to do as much time as they want. So what happens is the show with the special guests goes long. It goes longer than scheduled. So the people waiting for the next show have to suffer the indignity of waiting outside, whether it's cold or rainy, whatever. They're waiting outside because of a show that they won't get to see. Now, they have to wait to go in, and oftentimes we'll see a show that's not anywhere near as good as the show that caused that caused the lateness in the first place.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel bad for those.
It's a shit end of the stick situation.
It's a shit end of the stick. So, Noam, you as the owner, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, what can I do about it? I did ask Liz to email everybody on that show and invite them back to another show for no cover charge.
That's beautiful.
That's nice.
Yeah, but beyond that, I mean,
what about the possibility of offering no cover for the given show that started late? Drink minimums, of course, still will apply.
No.
You say no to that idea.
No, I don't think that having to wait a half an hour warrants a free night.
Well, it's not free. They will still be a cover applied. I mean, a drink minimum.
No, it's a two. We barely have a drink minimum. I don't.
So are they coming back for free? Or
they can come back. They can come back for no cover.
Yeah, because the reason is because most of them aren't coming back for no cover. Like, probably won't take you up on it necessarily.
No, a lot of them will. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to. I would have bought everybody a shot or something like that. Listen. The cost of giving everybody no cover in one night is more than I was ready to do to make it up to these people who have been inconvenienced, but not horribly so. You know, not in a way that I'm not going to give them a free night because they didn't get to see a show, which was good. Essentially, they've been inconvenienced by having to wait, which we've all been to restaurants and had to wait.
Yeah.
Nobody ever gives us a free meal because we have to wait a long time for our reservation. And they knew what was going on, and they were inconvenienced, and whatever, come back again and we'll take care of it.
And there's two ends to it, too. The people, like, maybe you get to see the $1 billion show next time you come. Like, there's a kind of a rip. People come here knowing that they may get to see something like that.
Keith! Come here.
Well, Keith Robinson, I'm assuming, I can't see, but said Keith, I'm assuming Keith Robinson.
Keith Robinson,
I just said you were the only honest man in comedy.
Well, I have a
Keith, you damn right.
Can I tell you why?
Why?
Because at a table of famous people, The only one who will say, you bombed, it's not funny, is you. Everybody laughs at anybody famous's joke. Doesn't
Absolutely.
I, right? Am I
keeping... Yes.
But you're not afraid of anybody.
Why would I be?
It's really true.
I got a lot of years in this business.
That's right.
We were discussing how all these famous people that come here are all friends, like, you know, Aziz
they're
and Chris.
They're not friends.
They're not friends? Aziz and Chris Rock ain't
they're
friends?
Money friends.
Well, yeah. What does that mean?
That means they got money. They feel as though they're equal in stature, equal in money, but they're not equal, and they, you know, they're not really friends.
So Chris Rock and Aziz,
I don't believe they're friends.
Well, they went to dinner together, didn't they?
They do that now.
Okay. Well, there's a.
What do you think they talk about?
That money.
I could tell
the
you I was there.
Oh, you were there. You were there. Yeah. What do they talk about? I'm sure they won't mind.
Wait, you were at the Blue Ribbon Diner? Yeah. But this is interesting. Yeah. How did you get that invite?
I'm friends with Dave, so that's the only way.
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the only way I would get an invite. And then when I came and sat down, he was like, great, Joel, you're taking Aziz's spot because Aziz had just left. So had he still been there,
oh,
I
Aziz
would
wasn't
not
there.
Have
so
been
was
able
you,
to sit down.
So who was at the dinner?
Chris, Amy, Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest, Dave's wife, Dave, and his publicist and friend, and me.
Yeah, they formed like a Justice League or something.
Yeah, that was like, the Justice League.
Hey, the Avengers.
We all have money. Let's hang out. Shut up. Yeah. But, God, it bugged me.
Like a super group. Yeah. Like Buffalo Springsteen or something.
Yeah. And they call each other.
But, Springfield.
It's okay. But, isn't it true that it's hard for people who aren't on, not for you, because you have some, you're gifted in a way that you're able to somehow be okay in those situations.
What do you mean, no?
But isn't it hard for people? Like, was it hard for you to be with those people?
I just shut the fuck up.
That's what I'm saying.
I just shut up. And it was funny because Chris actually mentioned, he was like, he was on the set of Harlem Nights for one day. And he's like, when Richard Pryor and Red Fox are in your presence, you shut the hell up. Yeah. And I was thinking
minute.
That
Keith
while
wouldn't.
I was
but,
I know, Keith wouldn't, but I know better.
At that dinner,
I know better.
Red Fox or Richard Pryor wasn't in the set.
No,
it's a difference now.
For me.
You see the difference? No, you got to be honest.
It's Chris and Dave for me. They're my
Dave
number
and
two
Chris.
And my number three.
Dave and Chris, who else is on?
Oh, it's Keith. Keith is really evil.
Oh, for sure. I've known that for years.
But Keith Keith really truly is one of the only honest people. You know, I'm not comfortable actually sitting alone with many comics. Like, I'll usually get the hell out of there. It's just me and another comic, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm totally comfortable sitting alone. Keith is one of the only people I could just sit alone with
and
at the table.
And that's because he's completely honest? Or why is
because
it?
Because, yeah, he's just like an everyday guy to me.
I'm
like,
an everyday guy, Ryan. Jesus Christ, Ryan.
Well, I hang out with Keith alone. I feel fine, too.
Well, let me put it this way. Keith never kisses my ass. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
That's on a small scale. No. What these super famous, like, Keith is like, I don't give a shit who you are. Like, I don't give a shit who you are. And we also, you know, we talk about some of the same stuff, and we agree.
Well, there's I think quite a few comics that don't kiss your ass.
I don't know what it is.
He knows when they kiss an ass. It's a lot of my CM too. Yeah.
No, kissing ass is actually a vulgar way to put it. And what was the joke I made about Ryan Hamilton? Go ahead, Dan. I'm gonna come to me. Go ahead. Say something.
Oh, earlier? Oh.
And you were the punchline. It was really
I'm the punchline.
It was
a
one
lot.
Of the funniest things I've ever. No, it was a compliment to you actually.
Ryan is nice. He stays nice. So it's hard to tell if he's kissing your ass.
No, right.
Come on, that was a good one.
That was good.
Keith, this is actually the only honest comedian.
Ryan, I'm surprised Ryan is not invited into that inner sanctum because of he's so so real and so nice and so genuine.
His Twitter following is too small.
Yeah. It's the bank account, Dan.
I would have thought that somebody would want to take Ryan under his wing because, look, a lot of funny people out there. But somebody as nice as Ryan is incredibly rare. Somebody as real and honest and genuine as Ryan is incredibly rare. far rarer than somebody that can kill on stage, which Ryan happens to do as well.
Well, that's very flattering to say. I don't know. A lot of people have been nice to me and taken me under their wing.
That's right. And yeah. I think Michael Che is an asshole.
I'm fed up with Michael Che. Michael, hates women. You don't have to be on the show, but I don't like all of a sudden you're famous and now you're doing like the public charity stuff and all that. Look how good I am supporting Planned Parenthood. I never thought you'd do that.
I'm just trying to do my part.
That sounds like guilt. Yeah.
If it wasn't for Planned Parenthood, I would be Michael Campbell, the real funny dad.
Is that your last name, Michael Campbell?
My name is Michael Che Campbell.
Ah. Che is a way cool name.
The more you know.
Is Che your middle name?
Yeah.
So I just found out that my wife's having a boy.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And so we're going to name it after my grandfather's name was Benjamin. So it's Benjamin Dwarman. So I wanted his initials to be BFD, like Big Fucking Deal, which I think is cool initials for a kid. So you know what his middle name's going to be? Flash.
Wow.
I'm going to name...
What?
It's going to be Benjamin Flash.
Now, I don't read mine, but I'm pretty Dwarman. Sure that Keith Robinson thinks it stinks.
Yeah.
Come on. What? When you were growing up, what would be cooler than to have a middle name Flash?
Oh, yeah. Man.
You guys are against it?
I'm not.
I don't really care what you guys say. Michael, you're famous. What do you think?
But you know what? We don't
your opinion matters.
We don't respect his fame just yet. We don't respect it.
How famous is Michael Che? Because I don't see it in this insular world. I can't tell.
Dan just said you're not famous.
No, I didn't say that.
That's what you're
I said I can't tell who's famous.
All right, whoever thinks Michael Che is famous?
I do.
I think he's famous.
Oh, God
not
damn it.
On the scale of 1
he's
to 10.
He's standing right there, Keith.
On a scale of 1 to Chris Rock, he's a 5.5.
But still pretty good.
Still pretty famous.
See, when you said 5.5, that's the highest you think you'd get. You mean 3.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
We need anyway. For the rest of those numbers.
I'm going to tell you what it is. You and I can't judge it because we're too old. When I was a kid, Saturday Night Live was a huge thing. If you were the Weekend Update guy on Saturday Night Live, that's real fucking fame. You're still buying Marvin Gaye albums. You don't know.
Yeah, but SNL. I don't know that
right,
SNL.
Right.
I don't know that SNL has that same
cachet
power that it does. I don't know if it does or it doesn't. Joel says no.
I mean, I don't think
the broadest appeal.
Well, I think TV in general is so fragmented that any one show doesn't have the same impact that it used to. Obviously.
Well, with Trump. I think there's been a big resurgence, like there was back when Tina Fey was doing Sarah Palin. SNL is really hot right now.
Yeah, because it's all over the internet and everything. So, yeah, I think so.
What do you think of Flash, Keith?
No, Flash is something that a Puerto Rican named this kid.
You know, we don't talk that way. But my wife is Puerto Rican, by the way.
By the way.
And I think that it's kind of a cool name. What's your middle name? Flash.
It is cool.
Great nickname.
It is cool. There is always a danger because can a kid really? Kids like to fit in. They like to be like every other kid, and every other kid is not named Flash.
Which, now, I know exactly
I think
what you're
it's
saying.
Cool if he's going to be jumped into a gang.
This is what Dan is trying to say. If you were a black guy, it would be one thing. But when you have a nerdy little son named Flash, people could just say, oh, did you see Flash running? Came in again? Flash?
That's another good point.
That's what Dan is. It's a big risk.
But that's a very good point. What I was saying simply is that it's unconventional, and kids don't want to be unconventional.
Hussein Bolt names his kid Flash, no one's going to say a fucking word about it.
No.
Very true.
But if he's not fast...
He's black, though.
Then, you know... That could be.
Is Bolt his real last name?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So Flash will be my kid's real name. Maybe he will. Maybe he will be a sprinter.
Nah.
That's racist, Keith.
Have there been any Jewish sprinters?
Yeah,
in Israel,
well,
in the Jewish Olympics,
the kid will only be half Jewish,
yes,
of course.
There were.
And probably not at the highest levels. No.
No, they have been. We don't excel at athletics.
No, they
except statistics of athletics. Like Lenny Mar. No, Sandy Koufax was Jewish.
Yeah, of course there are, and Mark Spitz, and there have been, you know.
Oh, Mark Spitz, that's right.
Yeah, and there have been very, but that's not what we do best, I don't believe. What we do best is, among other things, wisecracking.
Money.
Joy L said money.
Receiving
money,
sand period. In the face.
I don't know what you mean by money. You mean making money, counting
all of
money?
It, everything. With money.
All right. Whoa. Well, I don't know. You know, that's slightly controversial.
Oh, really? That's controversial.
Slightly
controversial.
Well, it is. It
will be when Esty finds out you said it.
I love you, Esty. Thank you for everything.
Esty has a great sense of humor about Jews.
Joyelle, I believe, I think, is into Jewish men. I'm not quite sure.
I am. I have a date with one tomorrow. I'm
very
excited.
Why?
Joyelle's a black woman, by the way.
Joyelle's a black woman.
In case the name Joyelle Johnson didn't give you a clue.
Yes.
What is it about Jewish guys that you like?
Probably that you don't look like my father.
Is your father Jewish?
No.
Oh, you don't look
like
your father.
Don't look like your father.
Which is why a Jewish man would be attracted to me.
Because you and your father have a problematic relationship, obviously.
Yeah.
You have daddy issues?
But there's a lot of people that don't look like your father that might be Asian, that might be straight up white people, that might be Ryan Hamilton. Why Jewish? There's plenty of people that don't look like your father.
I love a nerdy Jew.
Well, that's a compliment and an insult at the same time.
I do. I don't know why. I love it.
You're saying all Jews are nerds?
Yeah.
I know. I'm just saying I love a nerdy Jew.
That's the stereotype. That's the stereotype.
I said I love a nerdy Jew. I didn't say all Jews were nerds.
So I'm curious about this daddy issues thing. I have a daughter. Do you see, can you relate any daddy issues to your sex life?
Oh, for sure.
Like what? Tell us.
Well, actually, it's the unavailable person. So if you have an unavailable father, you're going to seek unavailable men and who match your father's personality. So if they're mean to you or if they're just always, like, unavailable, that's what I attract. Now
like
it's
Matt,
sad.
Like
yay!
That's not healthy. That's not healthy.
Your
no,
dad
not.
Is a doctor.
My father is a doctor, yes.
Hey, what sort of doctor?
Obstetrics and gynecology.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And he's not Jewish.
Not.
He was absent a lot. He was working all the time.
Well, I was one of his side children.
Oh,
that's interesting.
I've heard about that
in the black community. Yes.
But he's.
I've heard about that phenomenon.
But he's not.
I never thought I'd see it in person.
But he's a. he's an obstetrician. He is not the stereotype of the black community.
I actually know like three other people. Who either are children of side children or found out that their father had a side child when he died, that kind of thing. It's really common. I would not be shocked if my father had one.
He was
a
lady.
That certainly
Playboy.
Could have happened. Could have happened, yeah. So do we want to get back?
You want to talk more
night.
About the show? I got something
night.
Interesting
yeah,
on
that
show.
Ryan has an interesting point about the show. Ryan, by the way, was quoted. Are you going to talk about how you were referred to?
No.
He was referred to as some guy. Somebody wrote something online like, I went to the Sarah last night and I saw Amy Schumer and David Tell and some guy from Idaho.
Right.
And, of course, this is the some guy from Idaho that he was talking about.
Well, yeah, there is that. Michelle Wolf sent me somebody on the internet just did a rundown of the show, like in a comment on a news story, and so I became the dude from Idaho, and that got a little traction online. But that's not what I was going to talk about. What I was going to talk about is that I've been talking about a couple of times being on that show on stage, and I bring up, it kind of comes up. And then I go, do you know the story? And I would say 3/4 of the audience knows what I'm talking about.
You know, somebody.
And then I go, I'm the guy that you didn't know on the show. And they all go, and then they like me more, I feel like. Yeah.
How do you like Ryan Hamilton more is the question.
I think it was possible.
He's like at the maximum, I thought. But it is true. I was at dinner with someone the other day, and some girl, and she said, "Oh, I heard about that show." And I said, "Oh, you really know about it?" She said, "Yeah, all my friends know about it too. Like apparently it got some penetration.
Front page of the New York Times online. It was in the Wall Street Journal. It was on CNN. It was on Good Morning America. It was in the subways. It was
Time Magazine.
And that Time Magazine. It was literally millions.
And that very night.
Anytime you want to jump in.
Sorry. And that very night, by the way, that happened, we were doing, that we had the podcast that night. That very night, Dumb Gnome was talking about, well, you know, I mean, things are good now, but they could change at any time, and the stand could catch up to us.
Listen, so.
And that very night,
he's
got to
think
happened.
That way.
Thank
he's
you, got Keith.
That's what gives him his
why
edge.
I love Keith Robinson.
No,
he understands.
No, but Gnome obviously continued to be vigilant. But also, Noam is unjustly paranoid This club, you could do nothing at all. You have a 10-year lead on these other clubs. Well, and that's if you do nothing.
If he thinks that, he'll lose that lead.
Yeah.
He's got to have some.
He's got to believe that he's always.
But he needs to have some confidence. I don't think
it's
he understands.
Not confidence. He's,
he
he's,
has to. The reality is.
Let the man say something.
Go ahead, Keith.
When you own a club, as I have done, no. When you, when you own a club, you can't afford to relax on your laurels. You got to stay ahead of the game. You got to constantly think that, okay, who's my competition? Who's coming after me? And that keeps you where you should be at. He's got to think that everybody can catch on.
Noam is paranoid. First of all, my belief is that Noam has enough money anyway to last the rest of his life. I don't know that for sure.
What difference does that make? I don't. I have to work. But what does that have to do with anything?
I just feel like you're a little too...
What
worried.
What do you think?
I think you can relax a bit.
This
hang out. Have a cocktail.
This is how stupid you are.
All right.
you think that what I'm worried about is financial.
But that's what I thought.
No, what I'm worried about is the humiliation of being second when I was first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you should be.
It's hard to wear the crown, right?
I don't want to.
Heavy is the king that wears the
heavy
crown.
Heavy is the head.
Uneasy is the head that wears the crown. I do, only because I looked it up recently. I don't want to flop. I don't want to be the guy who took it and flopped. For any amount of money, even if I made more money, I wouldn't want to do it.
Fair
you don't
enough.
Know that?
Fair. Valid. I know it now, and fair enough, and it makes perfect sense. But even given that, I think, you know, you're beating so senseless. I mean, at some point, it's like it's almost as if who's it like Floyd Mayweather? Is he the big boxing guy? It's almost as if he's like that. Dan Natterman could flatten me at any moment. I got it.
But he does think like that. That's why he stays in that gym.
If his competition were me, he wouldn't think that. He would have a little bit of more relaxed.
I'm saying the beating
Noam is giving these other players, the beating.
And to keep doing that. You got to do it.
It's such a beating. I've never seen such a beating.
Listen, that night.
This is more than Coke versus RC Cola beating.
That was a Wednesday night, right?
It was Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So I got word that this was going on. I was at the Pussycat, and I didn't come over here. I was so like, because I didn't even want to risk forcing them to have to deal with me when I know they don't want to see me. Like, if it's just Amy over here, whatever, you know, we have, we know each other all the time. But among that you know, Mount Olympus thing, I didn't even want to come in because I felt like that would just alter the atmosphere a little bit, and they would have to pretend to be, say, hi, how are you? And Jerry Seinfeld. Blah, blah, blah. So that's how out of it and disconnected I am from it. I only care that it continues. I just want it to be successful. I don't need any be involved in it. I don't need to. I think
it is my belief.
I think part of the problem is that a lot of the other club owners really do want to be chummy with famous people, and I think that that's a reason for them not to come.
That's why. He's right about that.
I think so. They feel when they come here, they're not going to be molested. At least not by Noam.
If Chris Rock walks in, and I've had some normal, nice conversation with Chris Rock when it just happens spontaneously. But really, how are you? What do you want to drink? And that's it. I'll leave him alone.
All right.
That's a good strategy.
Yes.
And so you don't have to come in. It's my belief that you could take the next 10 years off and this place would run reasonably well.
Would I do, Dan?
I'm not saying you should do it. I'm saying
this is not what we should be talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, Dan.
What's wrong with that?
Come on, Dan.
Talk about somebody's sex life.
Do you want to?
It always goes there, doesn't it?
Well, Trump.
I'm trying to think what we
want to talk about
me.
Something with Trump, who just recently came out in favor of, or not in favor.
I will say something that is perhaps racially controversial. Trump got a lot of flack for referring to the carnage
in Chicago
in his.
Oh yeah, you're from Chicago, aren't you?
I'm not.
Okay.
No. In his inaugural speech, and I was thinking that if white people were being shot in Chicago, at the percentage that black people were being shot, white people would be fucking up in arms, and nobody would think twice about calling it carnage. Or even if it was black people being shot by white people at that kind of number, everybody would be calling it carnage. It was when I hear about thousands of people being shot, I'm like, why are we not reacting to this Why would, to the enormity of what? This is thousands of people being shot in one community. That's
like
carnage.
That.
I
mean, they are.
Why can't he call it carnage? That to me is a.
But who complained that he called it
the entire world of America?
People were upset about it.
People were doing marching. They were doing all that. Crying, marching, whatever, before Trump. But when they hear that, they hear
super
Richard
predators.
Nixon.
They hear super
they
predators.
They hear Reagan. They hear even Bill Clinton.
You know,
because we know what's coming after that. Law and order.
Well,
making a police
state. Not only that, but
arrest black people more.
Isn't it very touchy when a white man comments on what goes on in the black community? He's basically saying black people are. The subtext is that they're a violent community.
Can I answer both things? First of all, I know what Keith is saying. And I think that's an association that the mind makes. But if you think about it more carefully, when Richard Nixon was talking about law and order, to the extent that it was a racial thing, he was talking about white people being threatened by minorities. And he was playing the race card.
Yeah.
This was Trump talking about black people,
the same
human
thing.
Beings, citizens, being murdered in an unprecedented number.
Don't you understand?
And I want my president to care about that and talk about it.
Don't you think he cares, though?
Yeah,
I don't think he cares at all.
I mean, I can't read his mind.
Don't you understand?
I'm no big Trump. I think Trump is unhinged in many ways, but I'm not ready to say he doesn't care about that. Why would he bring it up?
I'm going to tell you what it is.
He didn't gain from it.
We've heard it before. We've been through it before. And we black people have been fooled by before.
Yes.
We took the, like, yeah, let's do that. And then all those consequences is there. It's right there. History tells us everything we need
to
know.
It's not the word carnage. It's simply that he shouldn't talk about it at all.
Well, also, because carnage is a trigger. Because what he was saying, it's like a trigger word with, like, rape victims have trigger words. If you say something like carnage, that gets people tense.
Okay, but as comedians, we don't like trigger word nonsense.
The way
I heard it, he was describing a situation, and I talked about this on with Baratunde, a situation of a group of people, many of them are children and sick people getting shot, who are being knocked off like flies, and America is doing nothing about it. And we need to do something about it. Nobody is speaking for these thousands of people in Chicago who are getting killed.
What is Trump going to do about it?
I don't know.
He's going to send in the feds.
I don't.
You understand?
Yes, I do understand. I'm just saying that I didn't see anything. If he suggested a policy, which you could argue to me, this is not a good policy. I say, yeah, you're right. But the idea of describing it as carnage.
He's saying that for a reason. Let's set up the next move.
How would you if he shouldn't talk about it, then say he shouldn't talk. If he is going to talk about it, can he not talk about it as something horrible and urgent?
I just think it's piggybacking on everything he said during his election and campaigning at the RNC when he was talking about how black people just live in these communities that are so ridiculously fraught with all of this violence. And it's like,
can I tell you a story about that? This really happened. I don't want to say who it was, but I was at the bar here watching Trump's convention speech.
Yeah.
With a black guy. And Trump was saying that thing about, he says, what have you got to lose? Remember that he says, what have you got to lose?
Yes.
And the black guy was sitting was like, yeah, you know, he received it sympathetically. 2 weeks later, that black guy was on Facebook just blasting Trump for that very same part. And I'm like, motherfucker, I was standing next to you when you received it without having heard how you were supposed to receive it, how it got spun, and you received it in a positive
way.
They got to you, you turned out. And I was thinking, like, yeah, if I was in Baltimore with all the everything going bad in Baltimore after 50 years of one-party rule in the state and the city, and I say, what the fuck? Why would I think another 4 years is going to be good for me? What the fuck do I have to lose? How much worse could the Republicans be than the last 50 years?
But Republicans, look, it's
not a crazy argument.
Yeah, it is. But you gotta see it from the perspective of history. We know in history what we had to lose.
All right, but Trump is, you know, been a Democrat most of his life. Trump's no,
Trump don't know what he
white
is.
White Southerner.
But it's
Trump's
still,
not a,
still
a Mormon
the,
from Idaho.
But it's still the Central Park Five, that shit.
But Trump
no,
wants...
No, no.
Trump's not from a religion that only let black people in the day before yesterday.
But look,
oh, no,
Trump...
Late 70s.
How do I get drug into this?
No, not you.
I think that Trump is getting most of his stuff from Richard Nixon. I'm the president of law and order. And, you know, we've just seen it before. And we've seen Rangel fall for it. We've seen our leaders fall for this.
Sammy Davis.
Everybody falls for it.
He voted for Nixon.
And we, you know, and we go to jail. We go to jail in droves and droves and droves.
Keith
and
went
droves
to jail. You know
droves.
What? He was drunk driving the wrong way down a one-way street, and he told the cop to go fuck himself. This year.
Yeah. No, everybody knows.
So proud of you.
I come from a long line of cop fighters in my family.
Yes. I've heard about your mama.
Family thing. You know, but...
Can I have a, you know, a French
that, that's what it is. But Trump really... He, I'm telling you, he's a dangerous dude. And he's going to be dangerous for a lot of people.
Yeah, he doesn't have a leg to stand on with minorities. That's the problem, especially
you
black
know,
people.
But
he does not have a leg to stand on.
Isn't there something that...
So everything he says is going to piss us off.
Well, the tone of the whole speech, and I think Carnage added to this, is that nothing was great ever.
Yeah.
And that there's...
Setting himself up to be that guy.
Right. Like,
that's ego-driven.
I felt like... Carnage contributed to that tone, that nothing, that everything's worse than it actually is.
Yeah. It's like being black in America. He's like,
right.
you're terrible, you have nothing to lose. It's the it's what he's saying underneath.
Isn't but, just the idea of a white guy talking about violence in the black community in and of itself enough to put make people uneasy?
Yes, it is, unfortunately, but fuck that. Why can't an American talk about other Americans in trouble?
It's not that. It's Trump talking about that.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just saying. That's what
it
Dan
is.
Just said about the very whiteness of it.
Look, this guy's the most insecure, egotistical guy I've ever seen. It's like, wow,
what,
he's
70 Kelly?
Years old. Besides Robert Kelly. No, you're a 70-year-old billionaire. And you're worried about crowd size. That's psychotic to me.
Listen, on this aspect of Trump, and if Dan will tell you he follows my Facebook, this is the one thing I've identified about Trump from day one. This is the real issue with Trump, is that he's unhinged on anything that impinges on his ego or his, you know, to the point of a disconnect from the truth. And, like, I couldn't have a manager in the Olive Tree like that. It's a serious theory. And, and in foreign affairs, it scares the shit out of me.
That's what I say. What I
don't agree is that you can jump from that to his bad intentions towards this person or that person. I think Trump is actually much more concerned about a lot of things than you give him credit for. Trump was... made it very clear nobody's to lose their health insurance. This was reported. I think that if you want to make him one-dimensional...
His guy couldn't even answer that.
If you want to make him one-dimensionally evil, you're going to be guilty of overestimating his evilness.
I think his ego is the biggest problem.
That is the huge problem.
When he was saying Carnage and I alone, he's setting it up. I'm the only... These other guys, you have all these presidents in there. You have Bush... this one, that one, that, and he's the guy.
Listen, you think we should build infrastructure in this country?
They've been trying to do that.
Right, now let me tell you the ugly irony of a Trump. If Hillary Clinton had won, and she proposed exactly the same infrastructure package that Trump is going to propose, she would never get it through. The Republicans would filibuster.
Yeah.
Trump will be able to get it through.
Well, that's another issue.
So from a very... practical, you know, without unpartisan, like, this guy has a latitude to accomplish things which Hillary would have never had. And if he chooses to use that latitude to build infrastructure, we're going to benefit from that.
Well,
if he uses that latitude to fix Obamacare in a way that the pharmaceutical lobbies and all the lobbies that ruined Obamacare when Obama was trying to get through, then there are possible benefits from this guy, and there's tremendous risks from this guy.
No, I'm,
but to view anything as one-dimensional is almost always you look foolish looking back at it 10 years
later.
Noam
is a believer that any infrastructure is good.
I'm not advocating infrastructure.
Well, we don't need a damn wall.
No one wants more bridges.
You're missing my point.
Well, but you're talking about you want more bridges.
No,
you said that.
My point is that partisan.
You have said you want more bridges.
Partisan politics being what it is, one party
I understand.
Will automatically oppose the other party.
Now I'm getting to another topic, which is your obsession with infrastructure.
I don't like sitting in fucking traffic trying to get home from Jersey. There should be a fucking bridge. In the 30s, they would have built another bridge. Listen.
Blame Chris Christie for that.
Yeah. And social mobility.
You know, you can build more highways and bridges till the cows come home, but, you know, there's other considerations. There's considerations of cost. There's considerations of inviting more cars on the road, environmental considerations.
Can we get Laster back here?
Laster will... Well,
I got to go. I got a spot.
Ryan's all right. So go ahead. As Laster to come back?
I mean, I don't think it's a open and shut case that we need more bridges.
So what did you guys talk about at Blue
at
Ribbon?
The Blue Ribbon. All right, we're getting off. They didn't talk about bridges, I assume, but maybe they did.
No.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Did somebody say something which you said to yourself, wow, I can't ever repeat this?
Yeah. Things like that happen.
I don't like...
go ahead. What was it?
Well, just as the baby of the situation, I just feel like there's... Most of the stuff I can't really mention. The fact that I mentioned that where the dinner was, I feel like that's going to come back to me. But just hearing them talk, I mean, it's a comics conversation. So it's the same conversation we have at the tables back here. We talk about other comics. We talk about what's funny. They were talking about going to meet Trump for a meeting, things like that. Politics were discussed.
Oh, Amy is Chuck Schumer's cousin.
Yes.
So she might have some inside information about Trump.
Go Chuck Schumer.
I will say that I don't enjoy when you know, they come here and they all sit at the table. I'm almost never at that table because, to me, it's not a real conversation that I'm having. It's them holding court, and I don't feel like I have the right to just have a normal conversation, and so I'd just rather not involve myself at all.
It's a regular conversation.
Well, it is, but it's a regular conversation that will not feel comfortable, interjecting into, and that I would be looked at as something lesser, so I just would rather not involve myself.
I didn't feel comfortable. Trust that. I didn't feel comfortable, but...
Let me ask you this. Did you notice if certain people were concerned about putting you at ease and if certain people were not concerned about putting you at ease?
I always noticed that.
And did you detect a differential at that table?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I detect that when I just walk in here after only being passed for a couple of months and sitting down at the table, so.
Chappelle, he has, like, the most kind aura almost any human being. Neil Brennan just walked in, I was talking about Chappelle. and he's just, like, he can almost make you forget that he's...
He really
does. Maybe the most important comic of the last 20 years. He's that's just the way he always was.
Yeah, and he's still like that, and he just calms your spirit. And he's a very much a people person, so he likes to talk about you rather than him. So he's always made me feel at ease of being in his presence. And
he remembers him. He came in one time when my daughter was born, and then he came in a year later and says, "How's your daughter?"
Yeah,
I'm like, I can't remember people who were like he remembers.
He's brilliant.
Laster is back, everybody. He's been hard working emceeing, which is something I used to do, but no
Switch
longer
to him
do.
While I pee.
Okay,
you have to go.
Julia has to go to the bathroom. We're back with John Laster. How's the show going, John?
Phenomenal.
Any special guest? It's not
not tonight. All the guests here are special.
Well, the show is always good anyway.
Yes.
But, you know, there's an excitement and a buzz when, you know, a big...
Without question. I mean, you got to think, man. You know, you get on a plane, man. You come to New York and you walk into this joint, you know, after hearing the stuff that you hear. Anytime you get a special guest. Not to mention, if you're from most of America, like, that's a huge deal.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, you know what? I take that back. Even if you're a New Yorker, like, where do you walk in someplace for a damn $14 and see a household name?
We took care of that. It's $15 now.
Well, what I want to know is, What I would like to know is, Noam, do you do anything? You don't do any, or do you, on the website? Do you ask people, how did you find out about the Comedy Cellar? Because I'm always interested.
We do, but I haven't looked at it in a long time.
I'm just sort of interested in knowing why people are down there. I mean, every single night, show after show after show, these rooms are full.
And, yes.
And what do you think accounts for that? I mean, how much of it is that there's word of mouth? And, oh, you know, guess who? Seinfeld might stop by, or Amy Schumer might stop
100%
by.
100% is word of mouth. And it's, I mean, if you want to include social media as word of mouth, which I think it
technically,
is,
yeah.
Yeah. It's 100% word of mouth. We don't advertise.
Wow, that's okay. So, but people from like the middle of the country, I mean, they're hearing about it from their friends from Ohio that were here in New York and when?
When I had the Cafe Wa, this is, you know, 20 years ago. And I was at my heyday there. There was no social media. There was no advertising. And we were packed every night with a line to get in. And that was just word of mouth throughout the world.
Well, you know what the other thing, though, too, is I also know that once you touch down in New York, if you ask someone, hey, I want to see a comedy show, where do I go? You know what I mean? The first thing out of their mouth is going to be like, hey, you got to go down to the Comedy Cellar.
If I ask 20 random people in New York, have you ever heard of the Comedy Cellar, how many do you think would say they've heard
after it? After last week, a lot more. I don't know. Probably half.
And half's an enormous amount.
Yeah. I mean, as New York institutions go, we're getting there. We're kind of getting into like the Peter Luger type.
Oh, what do you mean getting? Like, I think if someone says, hey, I'm going to a comedy show, if someone says, hey, I want to go to a comedy show, I think that more than half would say you got to go to the Cellar.
People who are into comedy, but I still think more people have heard of Caroline's probably. I don't know. I don't care. I do want to ask you this before we're just about out of time.
Well, okay. But shouldn't you care because, you know, we're looking into it, as you had said earlier, you want to stay vigilant. You don't want to rest on your laurels. And so whatever's working, you want to focus on that.
There's nothing I can do. The only thing I can focus on is making sure that the experience of the customer who comes here is such that they want to come back. That's it. There's nothing else. Nothing else.
They have to
feel that the show is good, that we didn't gouge them, and we don't. And we don't charge $8 for a Coke, and we don't charge $16. We charge regular bar prices for our drinks, and the cover charge is reasonable, and we don't charge a fee for tickets. Like, you know, they always show like a $5 fee on top of your ticket fee. We don't charge any fee.
Yeah.
We do everything in a way that is intended to be around for a long time.
And also make sure that chicken is cooked appropriately.
That's a tough one. I want to ask you this.
Well, because if not, it's not.
The cutlet?
The chicken cutlet is amazing.
I don't love the cutlet, but reasonable minds can differ on the cutlets.
The cutlet is awesome.
The cutlet's awesome.
As far as the burger's concerned, we can all agree that that's great.
The steak is amazing.
It's a good steak.
How competitive do you think that group of comedians is with each other when they're either socializing at the table or seeing each other like going on serially in the same show? You think it fucks with them?
I think personally that Dave and Chris had a little bit of a back and forth with their Netflix deals. That's just my personal opinion on that.
Yeah.
I think Chris got his deal, then Dave was like, haha. Like, I really feel like it was like a cute little, just fun.
Didn't they basically get the same deal, $20 million per hour?
Yeah, Dave got three of those $20
million. Yeah.
That's a lot of fucking money.
With two in the can already.
They paid him $40 million for two, he already did.
For two already, and then another 20 for one, and Chris has to do two.
Yeah. Chris was joking about that in the hallway, too. He said, you taking up all the money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they fuck with each other with that. So that's one of the things I can say, that they kind of mess with each other with that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I see in another context, like, comedians try to go up there with Dave Attell. You've seen it, so they.
Oh yeah.
And nobody, nobody can hang with David.
No.
He is like one of these Wild West sharpshooters, you know, like quick.
Yeah.
Jesse James. I mean, and Chappelle is kind of like that too.
Yeah.
I would not want to have to go on stage and spar with Chappelle.
What was Kilmer's name in Tombstone?
Oh, I don't remember.
Doc Holliday. I'll be your Huckleberry.
Holliday.
That's Dave Attell standing there with the gun whistling, like, go ahead. pull your shit out.
Because Chappelle, in my estimation, doesn't even need to be funny.
No.
And almost nobody has that. He can just talk about anything. He just be up there and smile and be like, oh, yeah, this is great. That's a gift.
Yeah. Right? He doesn't have to be funny to do what?
To be compelling.
Yeah, to be exactly the word, to be compelling. The other guys, they have to hit with some kind of joke. Other people say, what's with this guy? Oh, I saw him. He's kind of disappointing. Chappelle just get up there and shoot the shit. And
you're talking about Chappelle. Oh, I thought you were talking about Attell.
No, Attell's a... No, Dave, I'm talking about Dave Chappelle. Like to go up there against Dave Chappelle, or not against, with Dave Chappelle, is tough because you need to be funny. Well, Chappelle doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that... I think Chappelle is comfortable not being funny.
I'm comfortable not being funny.
I think that Chris Rock... I think anybody with an interesting perspective and point of view could be interesting. You have to have the balls to do it. You have to have the balls to go on stage... And not get a laugh every 2 seconds. And I think that that's a big issue. Certainly, I think, most of us...
Don't get me wrong. What Chris has, you kind of hit on this, what other people don't have. I mean, everybody has their thing. I describe what I think Chappelle has. Chris has this amazing, almost, philosophical insight into the world and premises. Although Chappelle kind of has a little of that, too. He keeps it... It's more subtle when it comes out of Chappelle.
Yeah.
But Chris is a deep thinker, and people do find that compelling. But it's I don't know, the dynamic of two different people up there together is always interesting to me. Like Jeff Ross and Dave Attell go on there together, and it's interesting to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris and Dave ended that night together.
Together, yeah. Yeah. Attell's improv, is off the charts, but Dave Chappelle is unbelievably comfortable in his own skin.
Yes.
Unbelievably comfortable. Yeah. And like I said, and that's compelling, that someone can stand there. I've probably only seen one other person who I've seen that could stand there, like a quarterback in the pocket like that, and his feet aren't moving the whole time. And Ted Alexandro.
Ted Alexandro was like, that's amazing. I was literally gonna say Ted Alexandro.
Just nerves of steel,
Very relaxed, right?
Yeah. My feet are always dancing in the pocket. Those two can stand there and pick their targets.
Yeah.
At their will.
Yeah.
Not dependent on audience reaction.
Yeah, and you stand there and stare at it like this guy's not nervous,
I think compelling. I think you're born with that.
Yeah.
I think we got to go.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just they were given a certain confidence as children growing up. They didn't feel the. I always, felt insecure growing up, and it translates into being on stage and feeling if I don't get a laugh every 2 seconds. There's going to be a riot. They're going to start walking out.
I remember hearing that the astronauts that went up with John Glenn during that the right stuff. They NASA hooks you up to
EKGs,
medical. Yeah, all your vital signs are monitored. And apparently, the other two astronauts, their pulse rate elevated, their everything they're measuring. And John Glenn showed almost no signs of anything, even during liftoff.
Yeah.
And they attributed it just to his way he is. Things just didn't affect him in the same way. He was just naturally calm.
Yeah.
I mean, and we see that in personality types. I see it in my kids.
And looking calm and your EKG sitting there like that is two different things. That means that guy was like, let's
actually
do this.
Actually calm.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do this.
I think Ted Alexandro and Dave Chappelle's EKG.
Calm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who else's EKG? I hate to admit it. Ray Allen. Ray Allen.
Yes, probably so. Some people don't get phased.
He does and he should be phased.
I've seen him up there
and he should be phased.
Ray, run for it. It's not working out, brother.
A little panic might suit you well right now.
Well, I'm at the opposite end of that spectrum. I'm.
Yeah, you'd be better. I see you. Sometimes one little thing will throw you off your groove, and you never recover.
That is true, and I really shouldn't be doing this for a living. when it all goes well, I do well, but it's this is why I don't like going on the road. I don't like doing. I always thought that I'd do this for a few years and get a sitcom. This is what was happening when I started. For some people, I saw Roseanne Barr. I was like, oh yeah, I could be that funny, and then I'll just get a sitcom, and that'll be it. Who knew that after 25 years I'd still be pounding it out.
By the way, I didn't say anything that I need to remove about anybody famous tonight.
Not
did
about
I?
Anybody famous, but Ray Allen. No, Ray Allen took a bit of a beating. I think you owe Ray Allen an apology.
They have the show in Aruba? I don't think so.
Well, they have the internet in Aruba. Sure.
All right. That's it. So thank you guys very much for coming. Dan, do you guys want to go around and give your Twitter stuff and whatever?
No, I think Twitter still a thing? I mean,
the president loves it.
The president does love it. But I'm saying, I've noticed that when I tweet something really, really good, it doesn't get the same retweets that it used to get. But I think there's less. Also, it never got that many anyway.
Activity. I'm on Instagram.
I don't think you can
build
a following.
Are you on Instagram?
I am on Insta, as the kids call it. They call it Insta, right?
Insta.
I'm maybe too old to stay Insta, but
yeah, there are pictures from that night on Instagram. Yeah. My Instagram is he was funny.
Yeah.
He was funny. Yeah, there's definitely
my Instagram need not concern anyone because I don't see it as a way for me to get a following on Instagram.
My stuff is kind of the only stuff on there because you can't take pictures in there. That's why a lot of them were just. They were screenshotting my Instagram and just using them in those early articles because that was really their only glimpse inside.
Can you believe that not one fucking person snuck a recording of any kind of that show?
Well, that's a testament to your security. Hell, because they don't fuck around.
Yeah. I would have found a way to put my phone on.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
This first guy, man, you guys are going to recognize from the Colbert Show, man. If you give him a lot of energy, he'll give it right back to you. You guys ready for the first comedian? Say hell yeah. Hell yeah. You got to do better than that. Say hell yeah. Hell yeah. And make a lot of noise for Mr. Ryan Hamilton. This next guy's a goddamn crowd favorite at the Comedy Cellar. Give it up for Mr. Dave Attell. Please, no cameras, no photography, man. We'll have a good time. We'll continue to have a good time, man. I promise you that, man. If you guys are having a good time, say hell yeah. You got to do better than that, man. Say hell yeah. Give it up, man, for the legend, Mr. Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry motherfucking Seinfeld. Bet you didn't know you was going to get that for no goddamn $14. Fucking $14? Get the fuck out of here. And then I'm up here trying to tell y'all not to take pictures, and Jerry was like, fuck him. You can take pictures? Right? That was fucked up. I'm like, man, the management told me that. I'm trying to keep my $100 job, man. Fuck out of here. Jerry up here with that nice-ass blazer on and $1 billion. Motherfucker, I need my $100, man. Fuck you. I'm doing what I was told. Fuck your rich ass, Jerry. Shit. You leaving on a jet tonight, motherfucker. I'm getting out of here on the boom boom. Next stop, Brooklyn. I'm leaving on the boom boom. All joking aside, I need to reiterate, I know Jerry was cool with it, but everybody's not, so please, please, please do me a favor. No cameras, no video. Could you guys do that for me? Could you guys do that for me? Thank you, man. You guys ready for the next comedian? I'm telling you, we got a hell of a ride, man. Say hell yeah. You got to do better than that. Say hell yeah. Give it up for Miss Amy Schumer. $14. Is this the best $14 ever or what, motherfucker? That motherfucker said, hell yeah. Hell yeah, well, keep that up, man. You guys ready, man? We're going to keep this rolling. I'm not going to get in the way of this great show, man. You guys ready for your next comedian? Say hell yeah. No cameras, no video, no cameras, no video. You ready for the next comedian? Say hell yeah. Give it up for one of the greatest of all time, Mr. Chris Rock. Yeah. I'm about to bring up the last comedian, man. Are you guys, are we having a good time in this motherfucker? You having a good time? You guys ready for the last comedian, man? Say hell yeah. You guys can do better than that after all that. Say hell yeah. Give it up for one of the greatest of all time, Mr. Dave Chappelle.
Okay, we gotta go. Your Instagram.
Instagram and Twitter, Joyelle Nicole, J-O-Y-E-L-L-E, N-I-C-O-L-L-E.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Good night.